Finally, a very angry-looking commander stalked in and slapped down a folder on the table.
I have orders to separate you from the regular space service as of today.
What? What's going on?
I think you know very well, Lieutenant Sweeza. And it would be best if you simply accepted the mercy of this separation with no more protests.
Excuse me, Commander, but according to the law, I have a right to know what I stand accused of and a chance to defend myself.
In a time of war, as you know, summary justice can take the place of a court-martial. Though if you prefer to sit around in a fleet brig for the next year or so, until we have time to convene a court, I'll inform the Admiral of your request.
I want to see the charges. I haven't done anything wrong.
Oh. And what do you call seducing Admiral Serrano's grandson? A direct contravention of the rules prohibiting relationships between fleet officers and land brides of Sweeza. For that matter, you did not inform Fleet of your land bride status until over a year after you became one. Also a breach of regulations.
But that was because of the new Tex-Mess.
And you had concealed your family's political prominence as far back as your application to the Academy.
I did not.
And then you coerced the boy into marrying you.
So many things were wrong with that sentence that Esme didn't know where to start.
He's not a boy, and I didn't coerce him.
And if you ask me, your so-called rescue of Lord Thornbuckle's daughter was an obvious ploy to gain political influence in that family.
What, I should have let her die?
You should have stayed back on your dirtball planet and planted potatoes, like the rest of your backward peasantry. Fleet has no place for your kind. You're getting your discharge ID, more than you deserve. I don't care if you get home or not. I don't care if you live through the next hour. But if you cause the least trouble on this station, anything at all, I will personally stuff you into an airlock and open it to vacuum. I am speaking for my CO and Admiral Serrano in this. Is that clear?
What was clear was the uselessness of argument. Esme took her credit cube, at least they'd given it back, and hoped she looked less shaken than she was on her way out. The looks she got from personnel were less scathing than she'd feared. Either they didn't believe it or hadn't heard it. Once into the civilian side of the station, she ducked into a secure comm booth to give herself time to think.
Admiral Serrano. It has to be Vita Serrano. But Captain Atherton on the Rosa Gloria said she'd accepted the marriage. Did she change her mind?
Esme shook her head. She had more immediate problems than answering that. She checked her balances in the credit cube and called up current rates for a ticket home. She could just get there on a roundabout base rate route that would take months and give her no chance to clear herself. She looked at the rates to Castle Rock. No direct passenger travel for another 3 weeks. She didn't dare stay here for 3 weeks, not with local brass looking for an excuse to arrest her. She scrolled through the list of ships in port, hoping inspiration would strike. The only name that looked remotely familiar was Tarakian. That girl, Hazel, who'd been captured with Brunn, had a name something like that.
Tarakian? Takaris?
Even if she was wrong, they might know. She could ask anyway. The man who answered the call had the rakish good looks of a story cube pirate.
Tarakian Fortune. Basil Tarakian Junos here.
I'm trying to locate the young woman named Hazel, who was rescued with Brun Meager from the New Tex Militia. I thought her last name was Tarakian.
Hazel? How do you know Hazel?
I was in the task force.
And you are?
Esme Sweeza.
You're Lieutenant Sweeza? Sorry, I didn't recognize you, Lieutenant. How can we help you?
Best get it out of the way. I'm not a fleet officer now.
But I thought, well then, Sarah, what can we do for you?
I'm trying to find transportation off this station, in the general direction of Castle Rock. I know there's a passenger ship going that way in 3 weeks, but I need to leave sooner if I can.
Uh-huh. I hear a story in that. You're in a secure booth, right?
Yes.
Beacon course?
Yes.
Why don't you come along to dockside, Sarah? It sounds as if we need to talk.
And he didn't trust a secure comm booth, that was clear.
Concourse D, level 2, number 38. We have a dockside office there. I'll meet you.
I'll come now.
Esme called up a station schematic on the comm booth display and then the transportation layout. B Concourse had a transgrav tram across to D. Esme glanced at the schedule display and hurried out of the booth. She stepped into the car marked D just before the doors closed. Someone who had come in rapidly behind her tried to push past the safety barrier, but a tram guard stopped him. Esme pulled the safety bars down around her seat and settled in. D car was half full. She could see through the windows in the end of the car that C was packed. The tram made two more stops in B, then slid through the G-lock barriers. Esme's stomach insisted she was falling, but outside she could see the great bays of the heavy cargo handling section. The tram stopped, and a couple of uniformed cargo workers bounded up and into D-car. At the next grav barrier, weight returned, and at the next junction, several cars turned off to other sections. D-car continued through another low-grav compartment, and Esme emerged at the second D-stop. She was on level two. On her right, a row of shops and services for merchant crews, from bars to message services to beds by the hour, with or without partners. On her left, at intervals, were the dockside facilities for ships in station. Each had space for a temporary office, decorated in as lavish a style as the ship's owners found desirable. Number 38 carried self-expression to an art form. Esme didn't know whether to laugh or gasp in admiration when she came to the multicolored carpet and exuberant floral designs, the drapes hung from pipe frames, the potted palm in a vast basket. A sign declared, Terrakion and Sons Limited, General and Express Shipping, and a very dramatic painted hand pointed to the office. Unlike the others, it was not a simple box in shape, but constructed with peaks and swooping curves, and painted in a pattern that made the carpet seem tame. Esme stepped under the pointed arch of the entrance and found herself in a surprisingly quiet space before the little office. She couldn't tell if it was just the draped fabric or if the Terrakians had installed some sound shielding. She shrugged mentally and went up to the office. The door slid aside before she touched it. Inside was what looked like a luxury sitting room, another floral design on the carpet, only slightly subdued, with large, plump leather seats grouped around it. Along one wall was a counter, and behind it a bright-eyed young man.
Sarasvisa?
Esme nodded.
I'll just tell Basil.
The young man murmured into a throat mic. At once a door opened, and two men came through. One she had seen on the screen in the comm booth. He was as dramatic in person as on vid. The other was older, far less vivid to look at, but clearly in authority. The older man extended his hand, and Esme shook it.
I'm Gunnar Terrakion, captain of Terrakion Fortune, and junior partner in Terrakion & Sons Limited. Basil here is my cousin, second in command of my ship, and the cargo master. You're Esme Suiza, formerly of Fleet, is that right?
Yes. Until this morning.
A lump rose in her throat. She hadn't let herself feel the loss yet, and she wasn't going to now.
Sarah, Basil told me that you wanted transport off this station with some urgency.
I wouldn't say urgency. I just don't want to wait for the next direct passenger transport to Castle Rock.
Sarah, I have to tell you up front, and despite our gratitude for your part in rescuing Hazel Takaris, if you're a fugitive from Fleet, we cannot help you.
I'm not. They discharged me this morning, and I still don't completely understand why. But they want me off this station. Threatened to space me, in fact. And I want to get somewhere that I can figure out what's going on and fight it.
Yet we know you're being followed.
I am?
Esme thought of the man back at the tram station.
But maybe the Admiral just wants to know that I'm leaving.
Or maybe he wants to know who you meet, and it'll put us under suspicion.
That from the young man at the counter. Gunnar shot him a sharp look.
Flatchy, were you asked?
No, I only...
Go make some coffee.
The young man withdrew through the door behind the counter. Basil pulled out a cylinder that looked just like the ones used in Fleet to foil scans of a conversational area, twisted it, and laid it on the table.
Have a seat, Sarah.
Esme sank into the cushions and wondered if she would be able to climb out again. The little status light on the security cylinder glowed. They were supposedly screened from scan. Gunnar took the seat to her right. Basil was across from her.
Kids, they never know when to keep quiet.
And you do? Sarah, do you have any idea at all why Fleet tossed you out when there's a mutiny on and I'd think they'd want every loyal officer?
Well, sort of. Admiral Serrano, Vita Serrano, that is angry with my family, and And her grandson and I just got married.
You what?
I married her grandson. Or, he married me. Anyway, we're married. We've been trying to talk to our families for a long time, and finally he and I had figured out a time that we could meet with his parents. Only all of the Serranos were there. At least it seemed like. And his grandmother, Admiral Vida, came out with a story about my family's history, and she was wrong. That wasn't what happened. It can't have been what happened, but she believed it, and she said we could never marry, and then the mutiny came, and we all had to go back to duty, and...
You and he sneaked off to get married.
We didn't sneak, but we didn't... Well, we couldn't tell anyone beforehand.
Such as your family and his...
Gunnar had most of his face under control, but a twitch in the corner of his mouth said he was still finding this funny. Basil wasn't. He was scowling now.